Canucks and Avalanche.
We've got the game tonight at 7. On your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We're live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. JanPro, from showrooms to stockrooms and everything in between. JanPro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit JanPro.ca. Now joining us in studio for the full hour, he is former NHL player, now an analyst here on 650 on Sportsnet TV, our pal Landon Ferraro. What's going on, man?
No, not much. Just remembering the reason why I don't live in a place that snows all winter. Just kind of getting that gentle reminder.
Yes.
Again.
I want snow every winter, but like I want it there for like 2 days and then gone, melt, go away. You know what I mean? I like having the snow day with the kids and stuff. That's fun. It's pretty. Then I don't want it anywhere near me. Get it away.
Yeah, I just think it's one of those. I loved it when I was a kid and I didn't have to actually do anything
yes.
about it. I just got to play in it. Now just shoveling a driveway is not it.
Not ideal.
No.
And driving in it.
Yeah.
Dealing with other people driving.
That's
in
the
it.
Scary
that's,
part.
That's the part. That's the real part.
And as we say it, the real scary part is the fact that all of us think everyone else is terrible at driving in the snow, but we're perfect. Guaranteed us three are dynamite in snow conditions.
Never made a mistake.
I kill it, man.
All right. So
you know what? It doesn't come down, I think, to being good at driving in the snow. It comes down to whether or not you have snow and mud tires that you change into every winter.
Yeah.
If you do, you're probably fine. If you don't, I'm probably using those little sheets that I keep in my car to help you out.
I'll also say the key is humility. Know what you can and can't do in the snow. That's the key.
You know,
you know what I mean?
That's a better take than
mine. Just don't let your eyes get bigger than your stomach.
Yeah. The worst line you can hear is, well, I have all seasons. I'm like, I'm not a car person, but that's not it.
That is not it.
That's not going to get it done. All right. So there's a lot has changed with the Canucks since we last talked to you. I remember last week where he's like, yeah, Landon, maybe don't come in studio. It's just a lot of Rutherford talk. A lot has changed since then, but, and we'll talk about the new pieces and how they fit together and, you know, what the team might look like and all that. But one of the big conversations happening around the team, and certainly from fans and, you know, the texts we get in the inbox, is about Rick Tocchet and his coaching generally. And, it was fascinating even after that Detroit game. And, you know, Filippito looks so dynamic through the neutral zone, and O'Connor has some good rushes. And there's people saying, oh, that's because Tocchet hasn't told him just to play dump and chase, right? That's why they're still making this creative moves. And it's like, well, Filippito played a lot. So it's like, it's not as if Tocchet was unhappy with what he saw out there. And even after the game, he said, yeah, I hope that rubs off on some of our guys. How much credence do you give to the idea that whatever Rick Tocchet is asking his players to do, whatever he's asking them to prioritize, is limiting or stifling their offensive creativity this year?
I think it's more like he clearly has, and just like every coach, like has a way he wants his guys to play. And they're trying to implement some more offensive looks in training camp. And we've gone through this a bunch, but like there's a bunch of injuries, guys away, like just a lot going on where like they never got to really dive in and commit to the changes. So then things start going downhill, even though they're treading water. Like it's been a hard year here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's gotten to the point, because if you listen to Tocchet over the past, call it a month, like he's said multiple times, like, I don't want it to be so stagnant and know what the next thing is. Like, I don't want my guys turning up and throwing it to the D every single time we enter the zone. But things start going bad and you don't trust to use your own creativity. So you're going to do like to the T exactly what the coach says, even though now he's saying, like, no, like, I need you to still, you know, have some creativity and make something work. But the guys have just gotten so dead set in on that. But you see some new guys come in that are in the right spots, but, like, they're still flowing a bit. Mm-hmm. Like, just watching on Neutral Zone regroups, especially, like, the guys that have been here are all getting to what we've heard a ton, especially early in the year, of like they're getting to their spots and they get there and they stop. Well, Heedle comes into the lineup and doesn't know that. And now he's just kind of free flowing through the middle, but he's like, he's trying to find open ice. He's using his feet. Now he gets that puck and he's moving. Like, just having some fresh blood and things to come in, like, guys will see that and be like, like, I can do that.
Mm.
And then, like, they might even go talk to Talk It and be like, hey, like, I need to try and do this. And he's like, I've been trying to tell you guys to do this. You know, like, I just think it's overthinking with no confidence has been a big problem here.
Do you think that, I mean, we know now just a little bit, and I'm sure there's been a lot more behind the scenes, but we're starting to get a little bit of an idea of just how kind of taxing mentally this season has been for the team with the distractions happening behind the scenes. Do you think there's an effect where when you're in that sort of situation, and it is, you're thinking about a lot of stuff that's not hockey all the time around the team, you almost just kind of fall back on the easy muscle memory stuff, right? Like, okay, at the very least, I'm not going to make a big mistake. You know what I mean? So 100%. I'm just going to do this the most simple thing I can here. And that can be actually a byproduct of what was happening around the team.
Like, I fully remember going through a tough stretch in Grand Rapids with Jeff Blashill, and like, it got to the point where, like, he pulls me in for a meeting and says, like, you're now doing everything that I've asked you to do perfectly. But what you're not doing is using what makes you different and effective as a player. Like, yeah, like, you can't, like, I don't want guys diving in on F3, but you're a really good skater. If you think you can get there, like, I know you'll recover. Like, that's something where it's different. Like, there's the ground rules for everyone, but even a fourth line guy can do something a little different than what your first line can do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have a bit of a different rope to, you know, a bit of extra length on it, but it's just about trying to kind of push that stuff behind you, because it does bog you down. It doesn't matter, like, the situation in anything. Like, you get through a tough time in your life and you look back and you're like, oh, it was actually pretty bad there for a bit, and I never realized it because I'm sitting in the middle of it, right? Like, you have to get some distance.
With where the Canucks are at, you know, it does seem to me that when Miller took the leave, and then there was that rush of injuries, right? Because about a week before Miller takes the leave, you've got the Besser Jeannot hit. You've got Hronek injured in Pittsburgh 2 games after Miller's absence sort of kicked in. And then obviously, you know, by the end of December, you have Pettersson and Hughes missing a run of games. And, you know, Hronek gets back, Dakota Joshua gets back, then gets out again. It does feel to me like the Canucks and Talk It in particular sort of turned the dial and started trying to win lower scoring games a little more defensively. I do think that sapped some of the offense. Now that the team has something more closely approximating the level of depth they want, even if they don't necessarily have the quality that a guy like JT Miller offers, do you think there's an element to which they're able to loosen the reins tactically here a little bit?
I think a little bit, but honestly, like, I'm a believer with this team that, like, I think this team's meant to play more defensive, mm-hmm. like, more of what we're seeing, and not like a trap style. I'm not saying, like, they're going to sit back and not try and rush and use their skill, but every time last year, this year, like, when this team's playing the best, like, they are stifling on the defensive side, and they're so tapped into that, like, you know, that's getting later into the third period, like, they give up like 14 shots to Detroit at that point, right? Like, there's nothing wrong with that. And I don't think you should be trying to constantly be trying to find a way to not be that. It's just once we get out of our end, because, you know, like, the breakouts were a lot better last game,
mm-hmm.
but, like, once we get out of our end, yeah, like, that's when you can lighten it off a little bit, mm-hmm. I think, and let them go. But at the same time, like, I just think this team is built, like, they're not going to be a team that wins 6-4 consistently.
No,
they need to be tight.
But they need to be closer to, like, average in terms of what they generate. as opposed to right now where they're generating shots at the 30th highest rate in the league and only the Blackhawks and someone else who's not particularly flattering company are below them, right? So it, like, there's an element to which, and first 16 games of the year, they were there. They were like 11th in the NHL in shot rate, and it's like at that level, this team's going to win a lot of games. Mm-hmm. At 30th, I think it's going to be tough no matter how well they defend because they just don't have solutions if they ever don't score the first goal.
But see, like, I think, like, you're not wrong. I agree with you. But, like, I think even just last game shows that there's more shots in there. And it's just on the way that they, like, they have to play. And there's three off the top of my head of low net drives after using speed. Well, who those three come from? Two were O'Connor and one was Hedl.
Right.
Like, it's the new guys. They have size. And, like, on Hedl's as well, like, he stutter steps on the left side of the net for that half second. And then he sees that there's a bit of opening, but he's going to take some contact and he goes anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where they need more offense. And that's where I think they can get what you're talking about. Like, I think it needs to be that tight and very defensive on their half of the red, but once they get into the zone, like, that's how you create more high danger. And, like, it's getting the puck to the net. Talk it, as we were saying about him earlier, but in his media availability this morning at the rink, when he's talking about MacKinnon, he says, like, right off the beginning, he says, the thing that I love the most with him is the fact that when he sees interior ice open, he goes. Like, there's no hesitation. He's going, he's taking that interior ice everywhere he goes. And this Canuck forward group has not really done that with any consistency. But just even, like, there just doesn't seem to really be, a want. Like, they're always trying to find that next play instead of just get it to the net and have a little battle. Like, those new guys come in, it works, these guys see it, and that's clearly what Tocchet wants as well, with, like, low drives and attack the middle of the ice. Don't just throw it off the boards and try and tip a puck every time.
I think the other thing is, like, sometimes, especially with the frustration from fans, a lot of things get kind of thrown into the same umbrella, right? Whether it's, like, the focus on point shots and what they're doing in zone, or the focus on dump and chase, what they're
dump
doing through
chase.
The neutral zone. Those are different things, though, right? Mm-hmm. Those are, like, you can play a dump and chase style more, you know, more heavily weighted to that through the neutral zone, but then still attack the middle of the ice once you get the puck in the offensive zone. You know what I mean? Those two things aren't connected.
No,
I think
no one dumps and chases more than the Carolina Hurricanes
or
the Florida Panthers.
And they're elite offensive teams, right? It doesn't prevent them from being really, really dangerous offensive teams. I know, Landon, you and I have talked in the past about starting from the back end with the struggles to move the puck and the way that slows the forwards down, and it makes the forechecking process so much more difficult because you're a step late getting in, and it's easy for the team to get the puck and go the other way. And so, yeah, I mean, I would love to see more of the kind of dynamic carrying through the neutral zone that we saw from Hedl. I think that can be more of an element. But if they're playing faster and they're moving the puck out quicker, that's also really going to help their forecheck. And you can be a really dangerous offensive team if forechecking is a big part of your identity.
Yeah, like, you need to have three guys going. Like, you can't have where the puck's moving up slow. Now you end up with two of your forwards stopped on the blue. There's only one with speed going in. But the other thing with the Canucks is, like, when they get into that issue, the puck gets dumped in. Even if they get there first, the other four guys are along the boards everywhere. Like, as they're spread out because they're going to try and rim out of it and all of that. Like, part of that interior ice that Tocchet was talking about with MacKinnon is, even without the puck, like, you need to surround it. You need to have someone below the pile, above the pile, and you need to have someone, you know, back a few feet. Like, the defensive guys are always going to sit on the defensive side of the puck. Well, that puts your forwards in a position where you can stand right on their back, and now any puck that comes out, you can poke and get it to another spot and start moving that way. But if you don't have the right support, like, the puck stays on the dasher, it rims around the boards a couple times, and then there's a point shot that either gets there or it just gets hit, you know, by a block in front. Like, it's too predictable. And to what you're saying, like, yeah, if they can get up with some speed, make sure you time it right, that you have all your pace coming in. Like, there is nothing more scary for a defenseman than knowing that you have one but probably two guys coming with speed, because even if I turn out of the first one, what's going to be waiting for me?
Yeah. And I just think back to last year. Now, not that they were an elite offensive team last year, right? Especially after the shot percentage came way down. But of the things that did work for them consistently, you know, I think about when Joshua and Garland were really clicking together and how many goals started because they dumped it in. Joshua wins the battle below the goal line. Garland gets it and he makes a play out front to Joshua or somebody else and they score, right? Like, that can be really, really effective, and not just that can be really effective at generating those high danger chances, not just shots from the point. And so I don't like that's one of the reasons I've never really bought this idea that, like, oh, Rick Tocchet just wants them to shoot from the point. Well, we've seen them do a lot of other different things under Rick Tocchet, right? I think it's much more of a problem of the message getting through as opposed to the message being, you know, flawed in some way.
My take on that, though, is we don't see the Canucks build things. I've always said this team, they're arsonists, right? They're really good at blowing up what you're doing. And occasionally, because the example you're giving, you know, and I think we immediately think of the quick go-ahead goal that that Joshua scored against Nashville in game one, for example, as like a bread-and-butter goal for that line. Honestly, think about all the goals that Phil DiGiuseppe scored on the top line with Miller and Besser, too. Like, they all look like that. It was literally... Phil DiGiuseppe, F1, Miller to Besser out front. Like, real quick, real easy, as Tanner Pearson would call it, stupid smart hockey. The problem that I bump into there is it just feels to me like, and you know, I come back to that Canucks-Nashville series because it's a perfect example. Brunette has his team with all these set breakouts and a real emphasis on moving. Like, they were always building something, and the Canucks really relied on blowing up their moves to generate offense. I still think that's been an issue this season, especially in the non-Quinn Hughes minutes.
Yeah, I like...
It's why that Hoglander rush goal. Hoglander against... What was their win on the road? Nashville. In Nashville. Yeah. That Hoglander rush goal. Mm. It was like, oh! Like, honestly, it felt like encountering a well in the desert.
And again, like, being at the rink for morning skate today, like, what they are... like, they changed a couple of their drills, it looked like, and like, what they're trying to do is pace through the middle on rushes, and like, either you're gonna make that shot and give it a chance for an X or like another shot, a rebound, or like, you need to move the puck early. Like, you can't have everyone going in to call it a 2-on-1 and everyone's legs are triangled out because you're trying to look for the perfect pass. Like, on all, not all by any means, but the majority of rush chances, like, those happen because guys don't stop moving their feet. Like, was it the first goal the other night that, I mean, realistically probably should have been an interference on Myers?
Yeah.
But like, all that opens up because no one on Detroit stopped moving their feet, and now you have to defend, try and pull someone down, maybe. Like, speed will always trump slow in this game, and you need to be able to make plays with your feet moving and just have like a bit more just punch in it. Like, the other thing talked about this morning, it was actually really interesting, was like, you need to aim for a basketball. Like you said, Brett Hull aimed for a basketball in the net, and we're aiming for like a pinpoint right now. Like, the Canucks miss the net a lot.
Yeah.
And when you are a team that already struggles to get shots on net and produce offense, like, you can't have that. You're going to miss the net once in a while, of course. It's going to happen. But like, you just need it. Like, you don't need to score. You need to give your line mates and your team a chance to get a rebound. Like, it doesn't always have to be the first thing.
Well, and I think that speaks again to kind of the idea of the team overthinking things, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's trying to pick their spot too finely or being so focused on being in their landmark spots but not actually skating and reading the play. How does a coach go about trying to kind of break a team out of that, where they're in this box and, again, they're overthinking kind of everything they do out there, and that's stifling their offensive creativity? How does a coach break those habits for a team?
I mean, like, honestly, like, at this point, it needs to be fun. Like, this team has been through so much. They've dealt with so much, not just on the ice, everything off. Like, we were talking about it earlier. Like, it is mentally draining. Like, this team needs to find the fun again. And any offensive player, even the guys that know they're not that offensive, they want to score too.
Yeah.
Like, it is the most fun thing to do in the game. And, like, just start showing some clips of, like, everything that has worked guys making that extra effort and it pays off, like kind of just reminding them of like, hey, like guys, we can do this. Like we have the pieces. Like we just need to trust and actually have some confidence in our abilities.
So the have the pieces question is where I keep coming back to, because the best version we saw of this team was right out of the gate for about 15 games. And it included Eric Brandstrom on the third pair. Now, I'm not pretending that Eric Brandstrom is Scott Niedermeyer, but he could get moving with the puck. And when you combine that with having Hughes and Hronek on the ice, it at least gave you multiple pairs that could get going in the right direction. I don't know that the Canucks have had that frequently enough over the course of the season. And I do fundamentally believe that that's connected. I'm curious to get your thoughts on that. But at first, I want to read you this stat to caption what we're about to say. 15 games, in the last 15 games, the Canucks have scored 32 total goals, all situations. 22 of those goals have came in the 330 minutes that Quinn Hughes has played, 575 minutes otherwise with just 10 goals. I mean, you know, easy math, it's almost 600 minutes, it's almost 10 games worth of time without Quinn Hughes, and they would have scored a goal per game in those minutes. I mean, to me, that's just... like red flashing light, absolutely need more defensive personnel if they're going to manufacture more offense.
And again, like I would say that, like, again, you're not wrong, but even just watching last game, like, and I obviously you want Quinn Hughes in the lineup every single night,
yeah.
But I was actually kind of excited when he got off early, because I'm like, well, now we get to see what these six guys look like with no Band-Aid to cover up anything. And it looked, not all the way, but it looked like a game that Quinn Hughes was involved in. Like, the puck was moving quicker out of their zone. Like, Marcus Pettersson, just having his poise on the back end. Like, he made a couple early plays of, he's going back for the puck, he gets it. He eats the first hit. He's starting to look for the next play. Well, that's not there either. He kind of goes back the other way, sees his, you know, 3-foot pop play, and he just makes it, and they move out and they get moving. Like, there hasn't been that poise on the back end really for anyone other than Hronek when he's in and Hughes for the most part. And so, like, there was less icings from defensive zone. Like, all of that helps. And, like, Brandstrom did a great job at what he can do. And at a certain point, though, like, there is a reason why bubble guys are bubble guys. Like, it's hard to do that every single day at his size. And, like, I know talking about, I know that way more than talking about Elias Pettersson up front, and like, I never had that type of high end skill, but I know what it's like to be a bubble guy, and like, you can have all that effort and you can really hold it up and play great, and then all of a sudden you go into another, like the next game, and you're like, this little body is tired. Like, it is a hard league, and if you don't have that high end skill and you have to play physical and you can't go, you know, kind of poke into battles, you have to put yourself into everything, like, it's hard to keep that up. And that's where just watching even Elias Pettersson, sorry, like DPD,
yes,
like seeing him skate, seeing him take shots, like, yeah, he got the assist, that was awesome to see, but like later in the game he takes that slapper that he comes diving in on, like, where's that aggressiveness through the first part of the year by other guys, right? Like, and it's because things are not, like, no one's confident. He comes in, there's a breath of fresh air, and he's excited. And, like, there's another really good piece. Like, that kid's going to be really good.
Yeah, they had 14 shots on goal in his minutes against the Red Wings, and I think that's sort of one of the reasons why their attack looked far more dynamic, was he actually is able to move the puck.
Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com. Another segment with Landon Ferraro in studio coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Landon Ferraro continues to join us in studio here for this segment.
What if we play Mythbuster with Landon?
Ooh.
Okay. We'll invite you to use the 650 Dunbar Lumber inbox. And then Jamie, you and I also.
Sure.
We're going to throw popular talking points, popular Canucks talking points from fans and on Sports Talk Radio at Landon. And you are going to say, like, real or myth, and explain why.
Interesting. All right.
What do you think? You're into this?
I mean, I'm just more curious to see what's going to come in now. So, yeah, I'm in 100%.
I'm guessing you have one locked and loaded here.
Well, I hope so. Well, I'm going to start with the Nosferatu question. We touched on it in the last segment, but I still want to put it to you more directly. Has Rick Tocchet removed the offensive life force from the players who've been here for a while, as evidenced by the joy with which Hedl and O'Connor appeared to play with in their first Canucks game?
I think myth, because I would say that, again, it's more of a confidence thing. Like, guys know that every coach's game plan is not 100% you do it by the book. Like, I was talking about it with someone earlier this morning, actually, like, kind of just this. And, like, you have your different strategies that you use, but every player knows where he's allowed to deviate from. And Tocchet, not that I've been in the dressing room as a player with him, but just listening to other guys, like, there'd be no guessing what he wants you personally to do. Like, he talks to everyone. You can see him constantly on the ice encouraging players to use their skill. And again, like, the drills I see just even from a morning skate today is up a half wall, drive back or cut back and drive it to the net. Like, he wants offense. It's the guys that need to just almost have that I don't care in them a bit of, like, every offensive skilled player, the reason they can pull that stuff off is because they mess up and it's like they don't care.
Right.
And they do, and they know they're gonna fix it the next time, but, like, you need to have that cockiness get put back in. I think it's more about finding some cockiness with the group than he's stifled offense. All I know is I've played for really defensive coaches. It has not made me want to score less. And I guarantee that's for every player in the Canucks dressing room too.
So let's drill down on that. The Tocchet sucking the joy out of the players talking point to an individual. Myth or not, Elias Pettersson is unable to thrive under Rick Tocchet's style of play.
Oh, that's a tough one. I would still go myth.
Yeah.
And I put it that way simply because I don't think it has anything to do with Rick Tocchet. I think any three of us could go step behind the bench tonight, butcher it a million different ways, most likely.
It's so bad.
Absolute disaster.
But
Canucks players are walking out. Coach Thomas Drantz is confused.
Trent's just asked for Lume to come onto the ice. He's been retired a few years now.
I think it'd be more like Drantz has played Kiefer Sherwood 28 minutes.
he's got all his oxygen tanks on the bench. He's dying over here. But no, like, I think it would be the exact same thing. Like, you bring a new coach in and now all of a sudden he's going to have confidence. Like, that coach can give him that? No. It's not, like, we've talked about this a bunch, but, like, you need to create your own confidence.
Yep.
You need, your coaches can help you along, and that's what they're there for. They are getting paid to help you be the best player you can be. But, like, man, at the end of the day, like, it's on you. Like, you have to figure your own stuff out. You can ask questions. You can watch video with coaches. They'll 100% happily do all of it. But at the end of the day, like, it's you. You have to make the choice of, I'm no longer going to be pushed to the outside. I'm no longer going to, you know, just allow myself to take a shot from the outside. Like, I'm going to drive in. And is that going to change overnight if that switches in his head today? No. But it starts building, and then you go from there.
real or myth? I see a lot of Canucks fans saying stuff like this, so I'm curious to get your take on it. And I want to personally distance myself because I would never criticize a guy at the fringes of an NHL roster in the terms that I'm about to, passing along a myth among Canucks fans. Or maybe it's real. I don't know. Noah Juulsen shouldn't be a fixture in this lineup every day. I actually hear it put far more crudely than that.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
That's as mean as I'm going to get. I like Noah Juulsen as a player.
So do I. I don't think he should be a fixture in the six right now, especially with both Pettersons. I see
both Elias. Pettersons. There's three.
Yeah, but on the back end, we're talking.
Right, okay.
Both defensive Pettersons.
Elias Pettersson on the back end, seeing him skate, seeing him play, is he going to make some mistakes? Yes, of course. He's young and he's in, what is he, played three games now. But seeing that upside and promise, I'm keeping him in as much as I possibly can. And I think it's only going to make him skyrocket a bit quicker. Has Juulsen done anything really for me to say that he shouldn't be? No, not really, but guys get pushed out of the lineup all the time. Carson Soucy did not play last game. And everyone kind of has their turn, but I don't see this team getting to the steps where they want to with him being a mainstay in there. Can he be a great seven, your eight guy? Of course. But as a top six, no.
Yeah, to me, it's there's the reaction now. And again, this is tied back to just the sheer level of criticism that Rick Tocchet is taking at the moment. Every time Batch tweets the lines and Noah Juulsen's in there, people are like, oh, what is this guy doing? But a huge part of it is just injury related. And, I'm like, they got Victor Mancini, another right shot option. I'm sure they'll get him a chance to show what he can do at the NHL level at some point here. But, he just joined the team. So I don't think it's like an obsession or a fascination with Juulsen as much as it is limited options at that end of the roster right now.
I would also say that if what we're most getting, triggered by or upset at is the 12th forward or the sixth defenseman. And again, that is no disrespect to those guys, but that is not the issue here. That has not been the issue all year of, man, we needed better out of our sixth defenseman or our 12th forward tonight. No, it's been about the top end the entire time. Noah Juulsen has played some good hockey, and there's no denying that, but there's clear limits on his game, and you start seeing some younger guys come in that have some bigger upside. How do you not give them more ice time? We've all gone through it, and it sucks. You see the younger guy coming in and you're like, okay, I can't really do that. I need to find something else, and he'll find a way to continue to be a steady defenseman and give some, lower minutes, but for this team moving forward, no.
You want me to keep firing from the
go nuts?
Okay. Let's go with myth or real. It's too bad that Cale Makar doesn't get a chance to play against the best defenseman on the planet tonight.
Oh, that's real. Who doesn't want to see both of them ripping around the ice?
No, but
was that your Trojan horse way of getting him to admit that Quinn Hughes is the best defenseman in the world?
Specifically that Cale Makar is a clear second behind Quinn Hughes. Real or myth?
I do not like you right now at all. I'm going to say myth, because if I'm coaching and you give me either one of them, I'm not mad. And
no, unless my opponent has Quinn Hughes, and then I clearly have the second best guy.
Who's he passing to? Is he passing to McKinnon?
Well, that would be sick.
No, but it all comes into it. You watch Quinn Hughes.
You're right. The gap between them's probably wider than we even realize.
Oh man, are you Quinn's agent now? The first media slash agent.
I've been saying this since their rookie year, and I took years of L's. I'm gonna enjoy this.
I mean, again, it's one of those you're trying to find where the differences are and who would you take and all of that, and is there really how do you see them separated? How is Quinn that far ahead?
It's that Quinn Hughes does more to create his environment. Like, Quinn Hughes has more gravity. He influences where the game is played. Cale Makar is one of the best finishers I've ever seen from the back end. But the deliberate, like, the way that Quinn Hughes is able to influence the game puts him in the company of the best for, like, Kucherov, McDavid, McKinnon. You know, there's like five or six guys who do it the way Hughes does. He's the only defenseman who does it the way he does. And Makar is more like a souped up Evan Bouchard capitalizing off the environment that McKinnon fundamentally drives. That's my take.
I would have a couple issues with that take, sure. I would say. But honestly, like, for a lot of it, yeah, like, you're not wrong.
Yeah. Love
but
to not be wrong.
I think that for a number of years Makar didn't have to. Like, he had drivers in front of him that he could distribute the puck to and let them take over as well. You look at the team here, even last year when everything, like, you know, it was the best team they've had in a bunch of years. Quinn Hughes is rushing the puck up. Who's he throwing it to that's driving through?
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's had to do way more. And this is the first year that Makar doesn't quite have the same depth. Or not, I say the same, like, not even close to the same depth.
Especially when they were banged up early in the year.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's tough. Like, they've been put through the fire in different ways, and guys, you come out in different ways. Like, you end up with one that has to play every situation and the other that really needs to play offense. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, so they've had to take steps in different ways. You roll reverse them, I'd really be curious to see what Makar is here and Hughes is there with the teams that they've been on and what they are at this day in their career. Like, that'd be really, really interesting to see.
Yeah. It would just widen the gap between them.
I have a myth or fact here. So Elias Pettersson has said in the past, has talked about him kind of craving the opportunity to be the first line center, the guy, the no doubt about it, first line center. Part of that involves, of course, matching up against the other team's best forwards, in this case tonight, Nathan McKinnon. So myth, taking on that responsibility can help Elias Pettersson, or myth or fact, I should say, taking on that responsibility can help Elias Pettersson refine his form down the stretch this season.
Yeah, so I mean, that's, you're basically asking myth or truth, do I believe in Elias Pettersson?
No, but realistically,
like, that is
the role, like, the idea that being asked to do more can actually, like, provide a spark for the player.
That is 100% true. Taking on more demands that you're focused and you know that you have to be at your best. My argument that would drop it a bit on the myth side is you generally see that person, like, punting the door down, trying to get to that position.
Right.
And, I mean, it's hard. You're watching through the first half of this year and, like, do you see a guy that is trying to kick a door down to be his best self? And again, like, I'm not trying to pile on because, like, you cannot, yeah, you could say they're pros, they're making a ton of money, especially him, but mentality and dealing with a ton of noise, like, just because you make a lot of money doesn't take that away. And so I'm not trying to give him an out here, but at this, like, I'm just trying to say that, yeah, there's been some things that probably pulled some confidence, pulled some attentiveness, but at the end of the day, like, you need to be the guy that shows consistently that nothing's going to stop you. Like, I said it on the intermissions the other night, I'm like, I don't want to bring JT right back into our conversation, but in that game with Hughes out against Detroit, like, that's where JT would be the driver of the team. Like, he would realize, I need to be better than I am normally for tonight. I don't need to do it every night, but I need to be a driver tonight. And that's what Pettersson has to get to. Like, it's the only way that he's going to be able to take those steps is, one, believing that he can do it, but two, like, just not being denied. Like, you have to see that extra effort everywhere on the ice. And no offense to O'Connor, who just played his first game, because that was a great first start for him. But everyone in the building shouldn't notice O'Connor before Pettersson. And that's what was the other night.
We've talked the last couple of days about just the lack of power and burst in his skating right now.
That Detroit game for me was a perfect example where, and I brought it up, one of the things you notice with Pettersson is that like forechecking anticipation. Like he does that thing where he'll make sure the defender sees him on his left when they shoulder check and then beelines it for the boards and gets a lot of pucks that way.
Yeah.
And you can see him trying that stuff and then he's just not quite getting there.
He's a step behind everywhere.
Yeah, and I just, at some point, I find it difficult to imagine that there's not, whether it's the primary reason or not, something at least partly physical going on.
I honestly think he's just thinking way too much. Mm. And when you think, you're slow.
You go slow.
Like, anyone that has played any sport at any level knows the difference between, like, you have that, you could be the worst player on your peewee team growing up, but there was one game that you could think back on right now where you're like, I don't know what was going on, but, like, everything I did was perfect. Yeah. Everything was right. And you definitely know it when it's the other way. So, I don't know, like, it's, there's a lot going on and things need to move along, but at the end of the day, like, you need to have strength, you need to be able to play through players, and you need to be able to let your abilities come through basically with your brain shut off. Like, that's why you do so many reps in the gym, so many reps on the ice. There's a reason why, you know, a guy like Kucherov takes 2 weeks off and then gets right back on the ice. Like, I was just listening to Pat Maroon talking about it. And he's like, he's out there for 2 hours every day, just reps, because eventually he's going to be in a game, he's going to be exhausted, and your brain's not working, and then all of a sudden you make the right play anyway, because it's just built into you.
And it's easy, though, to work out when the puck just always bounces your way no matter what, and has for the entirety of your career. God, I wonder, it's so how many, amazing.
I need to figure out my list of guys to bring up.
No.
Kucherov, ruin this over here. This would be the best.
Kucherov's my favorite because of, like, you see it literally like twice a shift where there's a battle along the wall that he's engaged in, and he just like seems to be like, well, I'll just like skate over here, and you're like, that's weird, like that's not, and then the puck just immediately trickles to him, and it happens, like, it's not luck. I'm not saying it is. It's clearly a skill, a level of anticipation that I've maybe never seen another NHL player have, but he does it all game long. Like, this guy's played 15 years and a puck has never not bounced his way. It blows my mind.
And it's funny, though, like, you look at guys like that, and even like an Ovi one-timer from that spot, like, how does it always get through?
Yeah.
Like, as much as we all joke that they don't move, like, he's moving an inch here, an inch there, like, just because it's not, you know, you've had a couple injuries and you have your third line winger as your bumper, as your guy on the wall on a power play, and all of a sudden, like, that guy's diving up and down. Like, he's all over the place because, like, I want to be open. I got to get moving. Like, the guys that just naturally and through their work know what's going on. They know, they can see where the play's developing, and they know, I don't need to move 7 feet to my left.
Right.
I'm going to take two little kiddie steps to my left, and now I'm in the lane.
Yeah.
Like, everything just seems easy. It's like the guy that puts in 15 rebound goals a year, and like, oh, well, he just taps it in the empty net. Well, why is he there every time?
Yeah, why is Gabe Vilardi look like the second coming of Luke Robitaille? In a way, like, because you'll see, like, a Joel Farabee have a 20-goal season. It's not going to last, but I'm telling you what, Gabe Vilardi is going to score 20 garbage goals a year for as long as he wants to, very clearly. Like, you can tell the difference. Can I throw some inside high heat to end this segment?
Oh, great.
You ready? Real or myth, the Canucks traded the wrong guy.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's brutal. That's just not even fun. I'm going to say that it made sense the way that they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And from everything that all of us are hearing and basically seeing, nothing is done. Mm-hmm. And until that deadline hits, I don't know, and none of us know what this team is actually going to look like. Like, there's out of nowhere, not out of nowhere, but, you know, like, Friedman comes out with Susie's now available. And, well, we've just had these two. Brock Besser keeps getting brought up, and they keep saying they're evaluating. Well, there's another piece. Like, there's a lot of pieces that, whether you like the player or not, this is where the business comes into it, and it's going to be interesting to see how all that shakes. But it didn't surprise me that it went down with Miller being the one to move first.
Well, especially you hear some of what Patrick Alvin has had to say since, and, you know, what people have reported. Not that Miller demanded a trade, but it certainly sounds like it was a mutual thing, right? It was Alvin said, like, he's been working with Miller and his agent for 2 months to find a solution here. So in that light, like, I think it's less, are they going to trade Miller? Are they going to trade Pettersson? And more, well, we're definitely going to do this. Mm-hmm. Now we'll evaluate Pettersson as well. We'll use this time to evaluate Pettersson.
Yeah, like, I don't know how you guys took those comments, but, like, to me, it sounded like the team very gently brought up it might be time to move on. And after Miller was able to kind of sit with it, kind of like what we were talking about earlier, of like, you pull yourself out of it a bit and you're like, you know what, maybe this isn't the right thing for me anymore. And it is best to move on. And I mean, it's hard to argue with that fact considering he had 2-2 in his first two games.
And looked the way we saw him look last year immediately on being extricated from the situation.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't think the Canucks were getting that guy.
No.
Again.
No, I don't think, even if you give him the summer and let things kind of fizzle out and, you know, we're going to have a great new start next year, it's just exactly what Rutherford said of things go fine for a bit and then things start to fester again. Like, this was never going away. It was an unwinnable situation that I think the Canucks did a very good job of at least coming close to winning the trade.
Yeah. And we'll see.
We're going to get into that a little bit on the next segment. I want to do the mental exercise of imagining the downside risk from these.
But I just want to say, your idea, like, the Canucks traded the wrong guy, it is objectively a myth because it implies that the trades are over. You know what I mean?
Right.
And we don't know, but they are. So they could easily end up trading both guys. So it's not as if they've locked in and committed long term now to Elias Pettersson more than they already had.
That's true.
So that's ultimately, even if you like Miller more than Pettersson, that's why it's a myth, because you don't know that it's done. There could be more fireworks.
Take that, Ryan Whitney. No, I just read the tweet from that was the myth. Ryan Whitney gave it to us.
There you go.
Oh, how about that?
Thanks, Whit. Jeez.
All right, Landon, you're a good sport, man. We appreciate it. I hope you'll do this again sometime with
I'll
us.
I'll think about Maybe it. Got a little testy
Maybe
towards
the
end.
Mythbusters part of it, but at least come in studio with us.
I thought
it
was a good
us.
Game.
Oh, yeah, it was great. You're asking the questions. How about I get to beat the game next time?
I like it. I'm intrigued by that. Yeah, absolutely, by the way. Open invite. Thank you to Landon. We've got one more segment on the way. We'll hear from Rick talk about the Miller trade again a little bit as well here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We're live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. It is a Canucks game day. They're taking on the Colorado Avalanche tonight at Rogers Arena. No Quinn Hughes, but another look at new additions. Philip Hedl, Drew O'Connor, Marcus Pettersson as well for the Vancouver Canucks. Let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
What I saw today was good energy out there today. Staying with it, being confident group, sticking to the identity team, just things like that. I mean, we thought we played a solid game, a half-decent game in Dallas, so we just got to build on our game.
We saw Quinn take a twirl this morning, and you had a good chat with him. What's his status for tonight?
Yeah, he's not going to play tonight. You know, he's he wants to gut everything out, but it's the right move.
Rick, what's your level of concern with his status moving forward? We're only three games away from the Four Nations tournament. You're going to need him. What's his status?
Well, he's not going to play tonight. Just 24 hours. You take it day by day with him or with anybody. So we'll see. You know, I've seen guys, things linger. I've seen some guys after 24 hours, things help. So we'll see how it goes.
Is this something that's been lingering for him for quite some time? Or is it something new that he's dealing with?
No, it was new. No.
Would you say there's been any improvement since
Friday? Slight. Slight.
What do you need other guys on your team to do to step up in his absence?
Well, I think it's hard. I mean, how do you replace him? But I think if everybody, you know, sticks to their game, you know, some guys can supply some a little bit more offense, that will help. But I think for the most part, you know, you can't replace a guy like him. But the team identity and stuff that can overcome short-term goals, short-term play. But, you know, he's a world-class guy. It's hard to replace a guy like him.
The fact that he's still targeting the Four Nations, that are you hopeful in the sense that that's not that far off, so can't, maybe it's not something of a serious nature?
We haven't even talked about Four Nations. Okay. Like, honestly, it's tonight, and then he's not playing tonight. So as the days go on, we'll have to revisit that.
Dammer tonight?
Yes.
Even without Quinn in the lineup on Sunday, it felt like your breakouts were better. What did you see from your group that you had?
Yeah, I think our breaks up has been better the last 2-3 weeks, to be honest. I don't know where we're at, but I think since Christmas, I think we're not giving up a lot of shots. I think we're one of the top teams in that. So that's a positive. Now we got to translate it on the other end of taking the puck to the net and, you know, attacking the interior. That's the next level for us. But I do like our breakouts because we're spending less time in our end. Then we got to continue to work on that.
Elias Pettersson, the defenseman.
Yes.
Only three games, but what have you seen? It seems like he's pretty steady so far.
Well, just his arrow. Big physical defenseman, good first pass, got a really good shot. Not afraid to, I call him a cycle buster. He goes flying in there. He doesn't care. He's a competitive guy. You know, Footy and Gaunch working them is going to really help. You know, it's little things like keeping a stick on puck, you know, boxing out properly, things like that. But that'll come. But the major stuff that he brings, the skating ability, the shot, his competitiveness, the youth, the guys love him. Hard to find. I don't even call him a prospect. He's trying to become an NHL defenseman for us.
You're an Ontario guy, but you played in a lot of American cities, Rick. Did you ever experience having the U.S. anthem booed for them?
No, but I thought the girl did a terrific job, by the way. She was awesome. She was terrific.
Rick, how uncomfortable was it? You played in a lot of big hockey games. I don't recall hearing that before. And as a Canadian, we all have different opinions. Your thoughts on it happening, and do we need national anthems anymore in sports to maybe avoid stuff?
Well, I felt bad for the girl. You know, she was terrific, so yeah. It is what it is, you know.
You talked the other night about Carson Soucy needing a reset. Yeah. What's your theory on, like, sending a message and trying to get a guy back in as opposed to giving him some time to work with coaches and try to find his game?
Well, we've all been through it. I played 18 years. Footy's played. Sometimes, you know, you need to, whether it's a reset or need a, you know, whatever. I hate to say kick in the ass, but a little bit to jump start yourself. We felt he needed that.
But, like, sometimes you do it for a game and send a message and then get a guy back in. This is going to be...
Yeah, he might play tonight. So, it's not that he's out. So, yeah.
When it comes to resetting your roster, and Patrick's obviously doing a lot of work on the weekend, you know, where are you at? What are you telling him? What are the things you're telling him about what your team needs?
Patrick?
Yeah.
Well, it's no different than the beginning of the year. You know, you bring new guys in. It's hard. You want to get to the system and chemistry, so it's no different now. I thought the new guys did a terrific job last game, you know, just coming in to a new setting, and I thought they all contributed, played very well. So talking to Patrick is about bringing in really hockey IQ guys, competitive guys, and fast guys. I think that's what that's what Patrick tells me all the time. That's what he's looking for all the time, you know, more speed, competitive guys. Like every team's looking for those type of players.
Rick, do you think your roster now is kind of stabilized? Could we expect more changes, or would you like to keep this group together for a bit?
I have no idea. Like, you know, there's plenty of time to see where we're at. And, you know, you know, with Patrick and Jim, they're always trying to improve the roster. I come in every day, I look at the lineup I have, and Footy and Gonch and the Twins, we coach what we have. Whatever happens, yeah, we have behind closed doors. What do we need? You need this and that. Sure, they ask us all the time.
How encouraged are you? I know it's only one game, but Marcus Pedersen came as advertised on Sunday.
Yeah.
And DPD looks like he's been in the league for a while. How much have you moved the meter in terms of the way you're back in the position?
Yeah, I think it's the characteristics that we want from our D. You know, T that can move the puck up quick, join the rush, get shots through. You know, walk in the blue line like, maybe not like Hughes, but walk in the blue and you know, making some plays to somebody down low. Things like that, Pedersen can do. Both Pedersens can do. And we haven't even seen Mancini yet. I think there's a big upside with him.
Rick, one more question on Quinn. Is it a matter of him needing rest? Terms of moving forward with him?
Well, I think anytime you have a guy like a Quinn or that type of player, they play so much. Anytime they can get rest, they got to take it because he plays a lot of minutes. He plays a lot of stress minutes. It's not just the minutes of stress. You know, he's always out there in stress situations. So, you know, not playing the next couple of games, use that as a positive that he is getting rest. That's the way you got to look at it.
Next week, you will have McKinnon on your
side.
Not tonight.
Yeah.
What's the single biggest challenge, or what do you, when you look at him, like, what's his greatest quality?
His rush, off the rush. It's no different than McDavid. You know, you give them an inch, they take a mile. You know, we're used to playing Edmonton and, you know, defending McDavid. It's no different than McKinnon. I think they're the number one rush team since they've acquired the H's. They've always been a good rush team, but very good at deep delays, finding the late guy. We got to be sharp on that. You know, McKinnon is, and he goes a million miles an hour. And the one thing that we could all learn from, when there's an interior opening, he takes it. And he just, you know, obviously he's unreal at doing it, but he's not as scared to get that puck in the interior and make him plays from it. He just doesn't stay on the outside. That's what I've noticed about these high-end guys, Kucherov, McKinnon, McDavid. They attack the interior. They're not scared. That's why they get 150 points and why they're always, you know, supplying big moments so that we can learn from those type of guys.
If Hughes plays in the Four Nations, your coaching staff is going to ask you, how do you stop Hughes? What's your answer? Lock him up?
Well, I'm not telling you guys. Is he crazy? But, you know, it's like this Four Nations. How do you stop a lot of guys? You just, you know, you got to stop people as five. That's really what it comes down to.
Rick, your top line, Besser, Pedersen, DeBrusk, they've kind of been struggling offensively the last little while, even before the trade. What is the message to them now that they are really the big three up front?
Well, like I said, attacking. They have to attack, moving their feet. Anytime you want to, if you're struggling, you got to look at your game. I think don't defer. I mean, if you got a guy one-on-one, take him. Take the guy one-on-one and take it. I'll take that all day long. You don't have to defer to somebody else. I think that's the most thing I'd like to see him. And shoot the puck. You know, we turn down some shots. And then the other thing, too, like if you want to be a goal scorer, have a mentality you're shooting at a basketball, not a pee hole. I think we're missing the net. Like, you know, you don't have to – you're looking for this kind of target. Brett Hall used to say he used to think it was a basketball in the net and hit the basketball because – Those times, like, it's too hard to always hit that pinpoint guy. You know, what's Gretzky say? All the shots. What is it?
All the shots.
So whatever. He'll kill me. I don't even know that. But he's right.
You don't score 100 shots. You don't take.
Exactly. Like that, and it's that same thing. Missing the net. you can't miss the net. I'm not saying those three guys miss the net, but missing the net, especially on a 2-on-1 when the goalie's out of the net, you got to hit the net. So.
On Bess's third chance Sunday, he had the puck in the dot, and he looked to feed somebody who was covered. And rather than – he's in the sweet spot.
I mean, Bess got a great shot. Yeah, you like him to shoot, but I understand what he's doing.
Okay.
You know, if it hits the skater, it's in the net. So
okay.
I'm not sure. Like, Bess is – you know, Bess is a good passer too. But, yeah, I mean, anytime Besser has a chance to go, he's got a great shot.
That is Rick Tocchet speaking to the media earlier today at Rogers Arena ahead of his team's game against the Colorado Avalanche tonight, 7 o'clock down at Rogers. And, you know, a lot of similar stuff that we've heard before from Tocchet there, talking about taking the puck to the interior. You know, one theme from Tocchet this year has, I think, been the praise for other teams' star players. And hey, McKinnon takes it to the interior, doesn't stay on the outside. Same thing Kucherov does, same thing McDavid does. That's why these guys are always racking up points. Would like to see some more of that from his star players, certainly. And the other thing that stood out to me there from Tocchet, raving about DPD. Cycle buster, really competitive guy, skating ability, the shot, says the guys in the room love him. Very, very positive from Rick Tocchet on Elias Pettersson.
Well, he had a Patrick Kane line for dinner on Sunday evening, and we all enjoyed watching that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, while we were watching, eating pizza or our roasts or what have you at home, he was, you know, eating a future Hall of Famer's lunch. Really nice. Love that. 14-2 on the shot clock in
pretty
his
good
minutes. You know, to me, it was the play in zone in the offensive end that stood out to me, right? And here's the thing, right? If Pettersson is a special, quote-unquote, NHL defenseman, it's going to be all of the stuff that Tocchet talked about that's going to become his calling card. But the ability to contribute that meaningfully offensively right off the hop, I think, is a good sign because, you know, it takes some time, obviously, to figure out the defensive side of the game, to earn the right to interfere.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, one of the most useful defensive traits a player in this league can have is the ability and the right to obstruct without getting whistled for it. It was JT Miller's superpower. And will remain, by the way. That's going to take a bit. Like, Pettersson's not going to have that in his first 100, 200 games. But if you can make skilled plays offensively and contribute in zone, like right off the hop, that's a really strong indicator that your skill level is high enough to stick and that your hockey intelligence is high enough to stick.
That's the biggest thing for me, your ability to read the game and think the game and the way you're approaching it.
And ultimately, too, that you might have some ceiling as you develop, because what makes Matthias Ekholm, Matthias Ekholm, right? It's not just that he's a sick lockdown defensive defenseman, although that's a crucial part of it. It's that he's also an enormously skilled player who you can put at the top of a lineup on a pair,
yeah,
and they don't take stuff off the table offensively. Like, that's what makes him special.
It's not his calling card, but he can keep up there. He doesn't take things off the table.
Doesn't take things off the table, baby. He'll let his stars eat. All right, I want to go through a mental exercise. We have about 10 minutes.
All right.
Been thinking, you know me, I'm always obsessed with trying to model outside the bell curve, like the extreme outcomes that happen going into a season, going out of a season. And look, why do I do this? Because every Canucks season has fallen on the extreme end of the bell curve for the last 6 years, right? 2019-20, it was like, oh man. Like, they literally hit their 99th percentile outcome. And then the next year, they finished 7th in the All-Canadian division. That was a 1% outcome. And then the next season, what was that? They reached both in the same year. You know what I mean? Where it was like they reached their 1% outcome for 25 games under Travis Green and then their 99th percentile outcome under Bruce Boudreau. And then the next season again, 1%, 99%. And then last season, 118%. Highest possible outcome this team hit. And then this year, solidly 1%, right? If you told fans going into the season that the Canucks would be playing a game in early February against the Colorado Avalanche without Quinn Hughes in the lineup, and that was a real problem because they're 2 points back of the Calgary Flames.
Yeah.
Who would have believed you?
Yeah.
People would have said, you are being negative, sir. Please stop being negative. And of course, you would have been dead on, and none of us, I mean, even the most negative commentator around this team wouldn't have believed it. So I'm obsessed with trying to figure this out, trying to figure out how better to talk about possible outcomes. And I think this trade's a fascinating example because I see there being two ways that the Canucks really, like, unequivocally lose this trade. We're talking about it in a decade as a disaster for the team, right? Two ways. One is that JT Miller outperforms Elias Pettersson by like 150 points across the next 3-4 years. And I think that's a relatively extreme outcome given Miller's age, given what Pettersson's accomplished for most of his career.
It's in play, though.
Well, and one thing I'd add is we talk a lot about outliers, and I bet against outliers, right? I think betting on outliers is generally bad. You want to play things conservatively within an age curve. So this has been one where, as an analyst, I've occasionally been fed my lunch covering JT Miller because, you know, Miller comes in and I'm like, man, he's an exceptional play driving winger. They move him to center. He still produces. And in fact, he produces more, but the defensive metrics fall off. And I'm like, man, I think he's a winger as a two-way player. He's got serious defensive gaps in his game. Then he figures out defense and has that 100-point season where his two-way play is also excellent last year. Now, we didn't get that player this year in Vancouver anyway. Maybe the Rangers will. But it's not normal for a player's peak to come between the ages of 26 and 31 the way it has for Miller, right? That makes you an outlier right off the hop. It's not normal for a guy who's been a wing his entire career to convert to center at the age of 27 and then have a 99-point season, their career best. It's then not normal for a productive but defensively flawed centerman to become a stud shutdown guy in a first-line role at the age of 30 and have a 100-point season with 40 goals. Like, none of that makes sense. In every respect, Miller is an outlier. And once you're an outlier, I then think it's important for us to treat you like an outlier.
Yeah, there's like an inertia to it.
Yes,
you know, like Derrick Henry. Once you become an outlier, you don't stop becoming an outlier.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what if Miller just is that foul-mouthed Adam Oates, but foul-mouthed and mean, and he can retain his effectiveness through the life of this contract, well into his mid-30s. Well, then I think there's a chance that we'll look back on this in 5 years and say, hey, I don't know that that was a good one. I think the Canucks picked the wrong guy.
They traded the wrong guy.
So that's one way that the Canucks lose this. Now, where I find this mental exercise to be fascinating is that if it unfolds like that, the Canucks will effectively be protected from the other way they really lose this set of exchanges, which is
the pick turns into Gavin McKenna.
Well, that's the most extreme example.
Yeah.
But if JT Miller is that guy,
that's not happening.
That's not happening.
Yeah.
So
at least the two worst options are mutually exclusive.
Right. You can only have one of the two occur. You probably can't have both unless,
I mean, you could, like,
you could, but
it'd be really weird.
It'd be a hell of an 8-leg parlay.
Yeah, it would be like, it'd be like if Shesterkin's injured all next year or whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Miller, like, it's like 130-point season on the
for the dead
on
last
the 68-point Rangers. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not seeing that. Now, I suppose there's a third way. And I know Canucks fans are up in arms about my guy, Frank Saravalli's analysis of this trade. I think it was on Flames Nation.
Mm-hmm.
But that clip's going viral. Not a fan of the exchange that the Canucks, or the series of moves the Canucks made, partly because he thinks they traded the wrong guy, and partly because he thinks Marcus Pettersson is a five. And I suppose the other way that this works out is if the or works out extremely poorly for the Canucks would be if the club signs Marcus Pettersson and Frank is right, he's a five. He's
not. And they sign him to a, you know, 5-year, $6 million deal or something like that.
Six and a half times $6 million contract. I'm so much higher on Marcus Pettersson than that. And one thing I'd say is he clearly jumps over what I call the Myers line.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, like, I love Frank's analysis, and I love that he both breaks news and has the stones to just have wildly strong hockey takes. Like, in my opinion, when you're willing to be like, he's a five and upset a Canadian fan base, or like, Seth Jones is a top pair defenseman on a cup winning team, like, God bless you. I love that. You know, I love takes. Live for them. But the Pettersson thing in particular, like, I promise you, do you know who knows what fives look like? Vancouver Canucks fans. Like, you know, other people might think the dark is their ally, but Canucks fans were born in the darkness.
Yeah.
Especially on the back end.
I think Pettersson Marcus Pettersson clearly, as you said, jumps over whether you want to call it the Myers bar or whatever. And like, there's a nice way we talk about fives where we call them a 4-5. You know what I mean? And it's like, well, if we're saying you're a 4-5, it's like, you're probably a 5. You're a 5 for a really good team. I don't think Marcus Pettersson is a 4-5. Like, I think he clears that bar. You know what I mean?
4?
Yeah, but
on a championship contender, could he be a 4?
But I don't think he's a 4-5. I don't think he's a 4-5 given the connotations of what that means. You know what I mean?
No, his defensive game's too good for that.
That's
my opinion.
Like, I think he clears that bar the same way we talk about forwards. It's like, well, he's a middle six guy. He can play on your second line. But if he's an actual second line player, we call him a top six.
Second liner, yeah.
So Pettersson, he clears that. He's not a 4-5 that, like, if you squint, he's okay in your top four. He's a top four defenseman.
If he's a 5, we'll know it fast. That's all I'm saying. Because it's going to stand out on this team if he's not a blue line upgrade. Game one, it looked to me like he's a pretty clear upgrade. He's not a needle mover, I don't think, in terms of like fundamentally altering the environment for his team. But, who is? There's one guy. He plays for the Canucks already.
Yeah, but I also think that if you fairly, and I'm not saying you, but just anyone, fairly thinks that the lack of talent on the Canucks blue line has been a huge issue this year. Not that he individually moves the needle, but bringing in guys at that level cumulatively does. You know what I mean? And having a guy who can be out there apart from Quinn Hughes and Philip Hronek, who can still move the puck and do some of the things he does, is potentially a very, very big deal. And that's the difference for me between, the top four defenseman thing and a 4-5, where it's like, Carson Soucy and Tyler Myers aren't having that impact. Despite the fact that they can help you in a lot of ways, I think Marcus Pettersson can have that impact,
yeah,
or a much bigger impact.
And I think that'll be clear soon enough, because this is the best part about hockey takes. There's no need to get too offended by them. If they're wrong, that will be made plain in time. You know what I mean? Like, just disagree with someone and then enjoy being right over the course of the next 6 months if they're wrong. I tend to think Marcus Pettersson is a nice addition to this blue line, but more than anything, I think the base case for how this works out for the Canucks is that he's a stabilizer, and that the Canucks, whether it's Elias Pettersson or Tom Volander, right, or Sawyer Mineo or whomever, that the Canucks are going to be able to develop a couple guys that really change the trajectory of this blue line and have Pettersson to help steady the ship as those guys learn and then be a useful complementary piece once those guys are impact players. Like, for me, the bet is more about what the Canucks have coming and Pettersson raising the overall floor for the group as they find that level.
Yeah, I think you need a bunch of guys, and he can be one of them, and then the young players can be as well. Like, you need a bunch of guys who have that skill set.
We all need a bunch of guys
in our lives. All right, that's it for today. We're back tomorrow. Crossover Wednesday on the show here on Canucks Talk. JanPro, from showrooms to stockrooms and everything in between, JanPro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit janpro.ca. More Canucks Talk tomorrow here on Sportsnet 650.